Excited to be able to talk to you guys today about what it's like to be a woman working in physics today. So I've called this The View from Physics. I also just wanted to mention something about NSERC, just because Ingrid just brought it up and the previous speaker mentioned it. I also just had my current grant extended because of my own maternity leaves, which, you know, it's things like that, just they just take a bit of the edge off, you know, and make it easier. So I am in the Department of Physics at McGill. I thought I would just take a minute and sort of give you a very quick background about myself. I've tried to limit this to things that I think are relevant to the discussion here today. Obviously, I'm more than just this. I am an observational astrophysicist in the physics department. I study the formation and evolution of galaxies. One of the components of galaxies is this cosmic dust that was mentioned. I've done most of my education here in Canada, so that's where most of my experience draws from. But I did postdoc. I did my postdoc for about 3.5 years in the Netherlands, living near Amsterdam. So I have some international views on women in physics as well. I joined McGill in 2006. So I should be tenured now, but I did take 2 maternity leaves. So I've had my tenure clock extended, and I'll be going up for tenure next year, which again is just another thing that makes life easier. I thought I would just mention my partner, my husband, is up for tenure this year. To my knowledge, he is the first physics faculty who will go up for tenure having taken an official parental leave, and I will be the second, because he took time off with our first child. So we'll see how that. So just to give you, I'm trying to give you guys like an idea of the culture of physics. You know, it's we're really the first two who have taken parental leave. So a very different world. And of course, he's also in the physics department. We're an academic couple. This is just a beautiful picture of the kind of thing that I study, if anyone wants to ask. This is the Andromeda Galaxy, our nearest neighbor. Okay, so I was asked to essentially talk about whether or not women do physics differently, which was a question I had a lot of trouble with and I thought about quite a bit, and I've tried to answer it as best as I can. In order to do that, I think I have to start with outlining a little bit of the state of the field in physics today, in part because I think that in many ways, physics and, of course, engineering really stand out from the other fields that we're talking about here today, the biological, chemical sciences, and also medicine, in that we are nowhere near parity there. Things are still very different. And so I'd like to just set that stage a little bit first. And there's been a lot of great studies lately that have looked at this, so there was a lot of data that I could pull. Then I'll talk a little bit about whether or not women actually do physics differently, and some of the things I thought of, and when I talked to my female colleagues in the department as well, some of the things we talked about. And of course, at the end, I'll just finish with a little personal experience, but I'll try and intersperse some of that throughout as I can. Because like the other two speakers before me, I'm not an expert in women's studies, in feminism. I'm not an expert in women in physics. I'm just a woman in physics. So I largely had to re-educate myself about this before I gave this talk. So I'll start with the state of the field in physics. So I'm going to pull a bunch of plots and statistics from the American Institute of Physics, which is a not-for-profit institute in the States, in the U.S., which its basic agenda is the advancement of physics in society. And they, of course, have a Women in Physics committee, and they keep track of the statistics of women in physics in the United States in academia. And so this is, so I'll be drawing from some of their statistics. So this is not work that I've done, and I can answer very basic questions about it. But, you know, I trust the source. This is just a look at the percentage of physics faculty members who are female at universities in the U.S. So these are percentages. And it's those first set of rankings that I wanted everyone to look at. And we've seen some of this already. We've seen some of the numbers here at McGill, but this is only for physics, physical sciences. And in fact, I should mention also, you can't actually see this because the fonts didn't come out properly. This does not include astrophysics, which is what I do, because astrophysics is actually an anomaly within physics. And so if you include the astronomers, who are sometimes also in their own departments anyways, it skews the statistics. We have too many women. So I'll start, I'll just talk about assistant professor, associate, and full professor here. You have three different years. I have put actually the numbers for astrophysics, but in the conversion from keynote to PowerPoint, they came out in white, so it's hard to see. I also just pulled the numbers from our own physics department here at McGill, just to show you how we compare here at McGill. So assistant professors has been, the percentage of women who are assistant professors in U.S. schools since 1998, which is obviously not a very long time scale, but sort of the last decade, has been pretty constant, increasing, nicely to see, somewhere around 20%. And this was the number that I entered the field at, this idea of women being about 20% in physics. In astrophysics, it's about 26, so it's slightly higher. Associate professor, the next rank up, you can see it's lower, but again, somewhere between 10 and 15% increasing. And then you get to full professor, and the numbers are still quite small. Now, there was some talk today about, I mean, this was mentioned before today, and so there's, you know, a question here about whether there really still exists a glass ceiling, and that women are having trouble making full professor. Perhaps they're dropping out, or they're never going up for full professorship. I just myself went through the statistics, and as far as I could tell, this was entirely consistent with the time lag. I mean, there are so many. You are a full professor for a very long time, and so there are men in there who were hired back in the 50s and the 60s, and it takes a long time for that 20% to become representative in that very top echelon, because you have to wait till all those guys retire and you mirror. You have so what I did was I calculated whether, you know, if all those women at the lower levels were making full professor, would that be reflective here? And it's entirely consistent with those women succeeding. And I'll show you something that agrees with that in a second. So, you know, that's good news, that, you know, it really is just this time lag. It could be this time lag. And I wanted to point out McGill because I think it's a great place for women who do physics. So, again, let's just look at those three numbers there. In terms of assistant professor, we are at 36%. That is partly because we have a large astrophysics group. Associate professor, we're at 7%. And full professor, we're at 6%. So we're quite consistent with what is happening in the U.S. And in fact, we do really well with our young faculty. I found this to be a very interesting slide and something that I wanted to highlight. This is the percent of PhD physics departments. So this is physics departments in the U.S. which grant a PhD. And this is the number of women they have on faculty, so these are professors, as of 2006. And so what I found really striking about this was, you know, you hear this number that women are represented at about 20% in physics, which to me sounds great because I know how dismal it's been in the past. But when you actually look at what's happening at a departmental level, a lot of these women are still very isolated. There still are, you know, most of the departments in the U.S. that are high-functioning research departments which have women faculty, they only have one or maybe two. So it's very rare to have what I would call a critical mass of women, you know, to have lots of colleagues, to have women at different stages in their career, different personalities, et cetera, et cetera. McGill, of course, has six of us in the physics department, all hired since 2000. And so we are really, you know, we're way over on that last bin. So we're doing really well. You can see there's also 15% of the departments that have no women whatsoever. This is a plot of the number of women granted bachelor's degrees in all sciences. Physics and engineering are, of course, the two lines at the bottom, the blue and the purple. And then we have all of the other sciences above them. Of course, biology is now above 50% women.
earning bachelor's.
The thing I wanted to point out about this is, so you see a steady rise here. There are a lot of women, there are a lot more women getting bachelor degrees relative to the men, right? Because this is a percentage. This is not just that everyone's getting more bachelor's. In all fields, physics and engineering are very, very low still compared to the biological and chemical sciences. But it's actually not as steep a slope as I would have expected. If, you know, especially in physics, it's pretty flat. And when I move forward to the PhDs, the higher levels, you can really see the steepness here. Again, so these are the same fields, physics and engineering down at the bottom. And you can really see a takeoff around 1970, which I think probably has to do with a lot of the political and social changes that we've been hearing about. Of course, that's in and around where I was born, so I've never known anything different, which I think is probably great. I don't remember the years before 1970. So physics and engineering have basically gone from 0% to about 20%. And the other thing that gives me hope, so everything is increasing, which is great, and I realize that if you work backwards, you see that physics is now where biology was about 40 years ago, just in terms of numbers. So there is hope for reaching parity, because now biology is at, what is it now, 50% essentially. So we could get there if we try. Of course, the attitudes are not where they were 40 years ago. I don't mean to imply that, but the numbers are where they were 40 years ago. This is, I think, a really, really interesting plot, and this is something that I've just mentioned and something that I think is so important, and I didn't even really appreciate it myself until I saw this. This is an attempt to show the differential between the number of women in physics and the number of women expected in physics based on, you know, at every level, based on the number of women at the lower level. Right, so this is trying to show you where men are up here too, where men and women are changing. So we're going from high school students all the way out to full professors, and you see the percentage of men and women in physics, men on the top, women on the bottom, of course, men increase. At high school, we're 50-50 because everybody goes to high school. And these are all students that are taking physics in high school, by the way. But you pretty much have to take physics in high school these days, so that's everybody. The minute you get out of physics, out of high school, the men go up to 80% and the women go down to 20%, which is tragic. However, the red lines are showing you, you know, if all of those women continued on the same track, how many PhDs would we have? How many assistant professors, associate professors, and full professors would we have? And the fact that the red and the blue lines essentially line up with each other are saying that once a woman gets to that PhD level in physics, she's pretty good. She moves forward, she doesn't tend to drop out any faster than men do. Doesn't mean that she's not more tired. But she, you know, women who make it tend to make it all the way. And the problem is really at those lower levels getting the girls into the physics programs to begin with. So something's happening with the girls at high school and even before, so that once they're done with physics in high school, they never go back. But it is really encouraging to see this. Now, and I'll touch on this again, you know, the women who, that 20% in there, the women who actually make it are, of course, very driven. They're able to pass their courses, which are difficult. They have some love for the field that keeps them going. You know, which, you know, I decided that I wanted to be a physicist when I was in high school, and nothing was going to stop me, astrophysicist. And so that, you know, that's a slice off the top of women who are determined that they're going to do it. And often these are the women that don't experience any kind of bias or any kind of strong bias or negative experiences, but they are not the norm of the female experience, right? There's a whole bunch of women who never even take a physics or even a science course in university, and they're the ones that we've lost. This is also just along the same lines. This is a survey that the IIP did of international female physicists, and they were surveying them to determine when they decided they wanted to be a physicist. These are two separate countries. This is the less developed world and then the highly developed world. So, you know, we're on the right here. And red and blue are either during high school or before. And so all the women who have made it today decided they were going to make it when they were young girls. And I like I said, I am one of them. So that is really, I think, I just really want to highlight that because it blew me away. That's, you know, if we're putting where we need to put our efforts now, I think, is in young women. Okay, so now I just want to quickly talk about what I was really asked to talk about, which is how do women do physics differently? When I first thought about this, I thought, oh, of course not. I mean, physics is objective, it's math, it's quantitative, we gather data, we work with theories, there's no gender, there's no way you could do that differently whether you're a male or a female. And I do strongly believe that. I think it's very gender neutral. However, I do realize that there are, you know, the culture is where we differ. And for example, there's many different subfields of physics, and we've seen this already. You go from astrophysics, biophysics, particle physics, string theory, which is really math. And these different areas of physics are, at least within the field of physicists, known to have different percentages of women. So as I said, astro is a huge anomaly within physics. For some reason, women like stars and galaxies. I don't know why, because I do, so I don't know why. There's also theoretical physics versus computer-based physics, so sitting down with a paper and pencil and working through equations versus working on a computer versus actually building your own experiment to what I do, which is using large telescopes. And one could imagine, for example, maybe men, because they like toys, would be more represented in experimental physics versus theoretical, or you could put together a totally opposite story as well. And then finally, there's collaborative science, which is very, very varied in physics. You can work entirely on your own, you can work within a team, or you can work within a huge consortium, and these are very different social ways of working. So I thought what I would do just to educate myself was just look at some of these different ways that women can essentially organize and network within physics. And see if there's any differences here. This is again from the same set of data. This is looking at PhD recipients in different fields of astrophysics over basically the last decade. What it shows, except for astrophysics, is that in these very broad regimes of different kinds of physics, there's no difference. So men and women, and this actually kind of surprised me because I thought there really would be a difference just because I feel like I've seen one. But when you average over all of the United States, there really doesn't seem to be any segregation within physics except for astrophysics. So for example, in 2003, almost 50% of the Bachelor of Science in astrophysics in the US went to women, which is huge. I thought I'd look at our own graduate population, which is, you know, the largest group of researchers that we have within the physics department. It's hard to do it with the faculty because the numbers are so small. Again, the highest representation is within astrophysics and medical physics, of course, because medical science has a lot of women in it. But in fact, the lowest representation, which is zero, is biophysics and nuclear physics. Biophysics is weird. But, you know, there's only four biophysicists, so it's small numbers. Nuclear physics tends to be it's an older generational physics that's kind of, I shouldn't really say that, but, you know, it's kind of phasing out. So it's also, it has less women just for historical reasons. I also saw no difference between theory and experiment. There's lots of women in the physics department that like to work with their hands and build stuff. There's no trends in different areas, except for astrophysics again. And everything seems perfectly consistent with each other given the small numbers, which is what you're usually struggling with. Then I thought I would go to the last 2 weeks of the papers on the preprint server in my area. And I went to those papers and I thought, okay, if women work differently together, I should see a higher percentage of papers with multiple women on them. Women shouldn't publish single author papers. I also wondered if they're not taking leadership roles, maybe they'll be less represented in terms of first author papers, et cetera, et cetera. I just was trying to do something that I could do really quickly in my own office. So I looked at the last 2 weeks of papers on the preprint server. I kept to only peer reviewed, so I threw out conference proceedings. I had to stick with full names because I just didn't have time to look everybody up who only had an initial. And I also had to stick with Western origin names because I had to judge whether or not they were male or female. And I just couldn't do that with some other country ethnic names. What I saw, so I had a sample of almost 300 authors over about 60 papers. 18% of those authors were women, so consistent with that 20%. 22% of the first authors were women. There were no female single authors, but there were, of all of the papers, single author papers are only 10%. So it's pretty rare anyways, and so when there's only a few women, it's entirely consistent, again, with just being small numbers. But I have never seen a single author paper in physics that was written by a woman. There were almost 50% papers that actually had no women on them at all. And again, there was about 20% of the papers with more than one woman. And so I did a little statistical analysis of that, and what came out of that was that this is entirely consistent with just taking those 20% of women in physics and scattering them randomly amongst the papers. So there was no sign that women actually like to work in larger teams or smaller teams or in teams that already had one woman. We just seem to be doing everything the same way that the guys do. Again, the numbers are small, so I think this would be a great PhD for someone in women's studies, by the way, who could do this properly. The two things that I've just talked about really seem to imply that there really is no, you know, the women who make it in physics do physics in the same way as the men who are there. But there are some striking differences. And again, some of this has to do with time lag and the distribution of ages. You know, most of the women in the physics department are young, so they haven't reached the peak of their careers yet. But so for example, I went back and I looked at the Nobel Prize winners in physics over the last 100 years, and only 1% have been women. Of course, women were represented at 0% up until 1970, so that's not so surprising. We have to wait for these young women to get old enough that they've reached the end of their career and they can start winning Nobel Prizes again. This survey that the IAP did of international physicists asked a bunch of questions about what they called career advancing activities. So not just publishing papers, but at what rate were men and women doing things like giving invited talks or sitting on review committees, things, you know, that had power and really put you in the spotlight and allowed you to advance. And that was kind of striking. So again, this was a survey of for example, they asked all of the physicists, men and women, whether or not they'd been asked to give an invited talk at a conference, and 58% of the women said they had, 73% of the men said that they had. So more men are giving invited talks. Again, the men tend to be older. Right, so they are the more established experts in the field sometimes. So it's not necessarily just a gender bias. There's fewer dissertation committees. Women sit on fewer dissertation committees as a percentage, and fewer granting committees. So a lot of these sort of administrative positions that hold power and high levels of visibility, the women are still underrepresented in. And again, that might be partly because of age. It might also be, you know, if I get asked to do some of this stuff, sometimes I just say no because I've got two young kids and I have to be at home, right? So whereas men tend to have that pressure a little bit less. So there's other things, it's very complicated. There's other things that could be at play. I also wanted to highlight the Max Planck Institutes, which many of you may know of. These are the really, really fantastic research institutes in Germany, where really the great physics is done. So I just looked at astronomy and astrophysics, which should be the best represented of all of the Max Planck Institutes, which are in all the different areas of science. There are 33 directors in total spread over about, I can't remember how many, but maybe 10 or 15 institutes. And of those 33, there are zero women leading these Max Planck Institutes in astrophysics. So I didn't even bother looking at the other physics departments. Again, these directors are older, established people. So it, again, takes a while for that 20% to work its way up in the ranks. But right now, by choice or by bias, women really participate, or just by age, participate less in the leadership roles of physics. And now I'm just going to finish with my own personal experience, which is just one slide, because I wanted to keep this very fact-based and just not talk about, you know, how I feel about the field, which may be biased. I work with a lot of different women in physics. I have a lot of female collaborators. And I do find that, and I've tried to say this very carefully, the women that I work with tend to be, on average, slightly more collaborative, less aggressive, less assertive. And by assertive, I mean that in both the negative and positive connotations. They're less likely to speak up when they're right, and they're also less likely to speak up when they're wrong. So you can believe what they say, but they don't say it as much. And they're also more constrained by family commitments, I find. You know, my female colleagues have to go at 5 to pick up their kids from daycare. We can't schedule meetings at 4:30 because people are busy. And that doesn't happen with most of the men. However, I put a little star here to remind myself to say my husband has the same constraints. So the difference there is most of the men I work with have a wife who works part-time or doesn't work or has a less demanding job, whereas most of the women in physics are actually married to other physicists. So it's more, yeah, it's again more complicated. But I wanted to end with this note, and this is something that I touched on before. I feel that the difference between men and women in physics is actually very small. And I don't feel like we really do things differently. However, we are the women who have made it through the system, which is still difficult. So we fit, and we're driven, and we love it. There's a whole bunch of women who have the aptitude to be physicists, and maybe they would do things very differently. We don't know, because we've lost them by the time they're 15. I was thinking this when you were talking, because I've seen that video, which I don't, I think that it's a terrible video, bad judgment. But I think, you know, that video was not aimed at the women who are already in physics. That video was trying to get at those women who think that physics is just for geeky guys, right, or science, right, and trying to say that you can be a woman and you can, you know, so I think it was very badly, it was terrible, but the point is that we need to use different recruitment tools to get at those women than the women who have already made it, because, you know, we haven't had a problem, and it's those women that are having the problem. So I'll stop there. Thanks.